This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Cravings podcast with Pete Dillon, online at joy.org.au/cravings and live Saturdays from 1pm on Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. Exploring all that's finest in food and beverage across Melbourne and Victoria. Sponsored by La Spaghettata. Over 35 years of food, family and fun at 238 Lygon Street, Carlton. Wine and dine with La Spaghettata for an authentic Italian experience. Pasta, wine, seafood, steak and so much more. Dine in and enjoy the authentic sights and sounds of Lygon Street. Or order takeaway now via Deliveroo, Uber Eats or Foodora. Eat, drink, love with La Spaghettata. Call 9663 6102. Visit laspaghettata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
If you were dining off a menu today, we would tell you you're having a share plate of experiences right here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. We're going to go to Mildura and talk arts and food and wine in that most idyllic of locations. We're going to have another look at some of the things you might expect to find on your plates this year. And we're talking to a venue that has reopened its doors in the most magnificent of fashions. All those things coming up very, very shortly. Stay with me. Hello, we are talking Cravings at 6 minutes past one here on Joy 94.9. My name is Pete Dillon, taking you through until 2 o'clock. Thank you, Dean Beck, for Word for Word. You know now what is on for the next couple of weeks for the Midsummer Festival. And I do have to say a very fond farewell to Chance Dorland. That is the last news bulletin you'll hear him read here on Joy for a while. He's heading back to Korea to be with his family. So we wish him a very safe and sensible and happy journey. And thanks for your contribution to our Saturdays right here on Joy, Chance. Earlier today, we were going to try and go to Mildura when I was on another program. And the reason we're going to Mildura is because there is a series of festivals that happen up on the Murray River. It sits on the border of Victoria and New South Wales and a little bit of South Australia, not so far away from there as well. It's where the Murray and Darling Rivers meet. It is my hometown, so I'm a little bit nostalgic for Mildura, of course. But the Mildura Summer Music Festival is about to commence in a couple of weeks. And this was something that was put together by Stefano Di Pieri and his brother Sergio. And therefore, there is the food connection with Stefano. And with Kim Chalmers and Helen Healy and a fifth person called Sally Hedricks. They put this festival together, and it's going to make them feel old. Now, 11 years ago, it kicks off on the 26th of January, and Helen Healy is on the phone from sunny Mildura to talk about that festival. Helen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Pete. Yes, it's a lovely sunny day here. It's
always is.
So for us, it's a cool day.
Hey, does it feel like 11 years, Helen, since you put that first festival together?
Oh, my goodness, yeah. Yeah, that photo that you saw yesterday really dated us. It does, and we've done done festivals over summer each year with beautiful music. And, and the combination of Sergio Di Pieri as our artistic director and Stefano Di Pieri's input, particularly feeding the artists. So it's a lovely combination.
Now, if I'm reminded of Sergio, wrote a book called, I think, The Maestro's Table. I think he was living half the time in Italy and half the time in Australia, where there was a whole bunch of visiting musicians and artists that would sit at his table. And this book that's written by an Australian academic talks about the joy of sitting at that table and how Sergio could create food out of nothing. And I think that's very much evident in what he and his brother do now together.
Absolutely, and it's just knowing the best ingredients and how to simply put them together to elicit great taste. But yes, they're both great cooks.
And look, Mildura, the Sunraysia region is a magnificent food bowl and has been for a long time. If you think about the production of things like grapes and citrus, and there's a lot of market gardens, there's a lot of tomatoes and those Mediterranean vegetables grown up there, olives as well. It has a very important place in our food production.
Absolutely. Yeah, some of the figures around what we do here, we are one of the biggest food bowls in the Southern Hemisphere, and we produce about 70% of Australians' wine grapes and biggest carrot growers, and now the almond plantings are massive. But yes, the roots are firmly in growing grapes and citrus, so it's a great time of the year. Over summer when we have the melons out and the grapes are coming on, and yeah, it's lovely.
I worry about that expression that we have our melons out. It does mean something terribly, terribly different to me and Helen. I apologise humbly. Hey, you do have the Mildura Jazz Food and Wine Festival as part of a sort of an ongoing program of five different festivals that's in under Arts Mildura. And then the Summer Music Festival, which kicks off on the Australia Day long weekend, I think. Tell us about what is in the Summer Music Festival.
Well, having an artistic director like Sergio De Pieri, we can get so many amazing people to come up here because he's so highly regarded and so loved. We ring artists and, could you come play in Mildura? Oh, yeah. And then you put Sergio on the phone. It's like, yes, absolutely, we do anything for you. So we've collaborated this year with Richard Mills from Victorian Opera, and we have two singers coming, Jeremy Kleeman and Olivia Cranwell. And they're going to be playing some of the most loved operatic songs as our opening concert on the 26th at the Mercy Theatre. And then we're welcoming back Joe Kindamo. I'm not sure if you know about Joe. But
he's been in the Melbourne Jazz Festival many a year.
Yeah, he's amazing. So he is currently collaborating with Zoe Black, a violinist, formerly the Australian Chamber Orchestra, and toured throughout the world. So they're putting a concert on across the river in the Wentworth Town Hall. The Wenty Town Hall, yes. And then patrons over there will enjoy the local food and wine at the local cafe called Outback. And then we've got a couple of ensembles. We've got Inventi Ensemble with Ben Opie on oboe and Ryan Williams, who's apparently a rock star recorder player.
And with no disrespect, they're certainly worth going and seeing just for the look.
I agree, I've seen the pics. And Nick Pollock on the oboe and lute. So that'll be a beautiful concert. And we're also staging that one in Broken Hill, as well as here in Mildura on Saturday the 28th. And then we have the Streeton Trio and Emma Jardine on violin, who's also doing a solo violin concert at the beautiful Art Vault, our wonderful gallery in Mildura, and along with Blair Harris on cello and Benjamin Clough on piano. They'll be performing at the closing night concert on Sunday the 29th. But all the artists are so generous. They really understand that sometimes being so isolated, we don't have a lot of possibilities for our young musicians. So they all present instrumental workshops and masterclasses. So it's a wonderful opportunity for local musicians to sit down with these, you know, world-renowned musicians and have a cello masterclass or a violin masterclass. So it's a beautiful little festival, and people just love coming. Over those 11 years, there's a trust being developed that whatever we program, people will just come because they know it's going to be really beautiful music.
And Helen, the good burgers of Mildura, some might say that because of the isolation that it could be a bit of a cultural desert. I think the opposite actually speaks for itself. Likewise, with the food scene that happens in and around Mildura as well, it's growing, it's constantly evolving, it's vibrant. And it really is a place of wonderful beauty, not just in the topography, but of some of the events and some of the food and some of the arts activity that happens in the town.
Oh, absolutely. We, like, as you know, Stefano De Pieri launched his gondola on the Murray, wow, it must be nearly 20 years ago now.
It is 19 years ago, I think.
There you go. And since that, like, he put us on the map as far as taking our local food and wine and applying his, you know, amazing mastery skills in the kitchen. And now we literally have new bars and cafes and restaurants opening on a regular basis. It's just such a delight here. We are like a really multicultural society here. We have 87 different cultural groups from around the world live here, and many of them are opening cafes, Asian cooking and Middle Eastern, and we're very, very, very lucky. But it all started with Stefano coming here and showing us how to eat simply and wonderfully. And so the rest, he's really involved in all of this.
Mm, and the rest, as I say, in history, is almost your unofficial ambassador up there, and he's a mighty fine man, and he has children that are probably going to continue on that legacy that he's creating as well.
Mm-hmm. And now he's got the Mildura Brewery with the Mildura beer, and so all the artists eat there.
Mm. It's a fine drop too. I have to confess, I've actually spent some time in that brewery and got a little over refreshed, I think, one night. But there's a great range of beers that are being produced in the area, and I think that's what I like about sort of revisiting in Mildura is the growth of boutique and craft industries as well. I mean, it's always been a place where wine has been made, and irrigation's been important to how the town has flourished. But there seems to be something new happening every time I visit. Helen, if people want to know more about the Summer Music Festival, the Food and Wine Festival, and various other events you have up there, the best website for them?
Okay, so the best website for the cultural events that we put on at Arts Mildura is artsmildura.com.au. But then you can also have a look on visitmildura.com.au to have a look at other things that are on, because there's something like about 400 events on over the year, but Arts Mildura presents five of them, including, as you mentioned, the jazz and now the classic music. And we have a fabulous writers' festival in July and visual arts events. And yeah, thriving community. You should come home soon.
And it's a very easy place to fly to out of Melbourne. It's about an hour.
Yes. Exactly. We have three airlines servicing us, one of the busiest regional airports in the country.
It's fantastic. Helen, thank you for joining me. Go and enjoy that sunshine.
I will. Thank you so much, Pete.
No worries. That's Helen Healy. She is the festival director for the Summer Music Festival and also at all of those thriving festivals that happen in the Mildura Sunraysia region. I'll be back very shortly. We're going to have a look at some predictions of what we might be eating this year. It's 16 minutes after one. You're on Joy 94.9. I'm Pete Dillon, and this is Cravings.
We're listening to you. SMS 0427 Joy 949. Email onair at joy.org.au or call us 1300 JOY 949.
Yes, you can get involved with this program any of those ways. Text 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au. We have an email from Linda. We haven't heard from Linda for a couple of weeks. She's been very busy. Hi, Pete. I'm happy to be listening to the show tonight. We've been busy visiting with Tad and Richard. Tad, who is my regular co-host. All my children were home for Christmas this year for the first time in 22 years. We had a wonderful time, and Tad has just left New York for Melbourne. I miss him already. So thank you for the email, Linda, and we're looking forward to having Tad back at the desk next week with us. So I'm feeling a bit lonely here in the studio. It's all a bit sad, and there's somewhere I'd actually like to be, and I reckon the smells would be pretty awesome, because she is a wonderful cook, I am led to believe, but also an incredibly talented journalist. She is from Epicure in The Age. Her name is Rosalind Grundy, and is currently, from my understanding, making some jam. Good afternoon, Rosalind.
Hi, Pete. How are you going?
Good. What jam are you making today?
I will be making apricot jam. I haven't quite started yet because I didn't want to burn it while I was talking to you.
Right, okay. What's the secret for making good jam?
Look, I'm very much an amateur jam maker, so I'm not going to pretend I'm one of those CWA ladies who can give you all the secrets. Really, I've had as many disasters with jam as I've had successes. And in fact, I wrote a story once for The Age about making plum jam, and all the disasters I'd had with it. And I got the most gorgeous letters in spidery writing, handwriting from women who were giving me advice on how to make plum jam. So, yeah. The apricot last year, the apricot jam last year was pretty darn good, if I say so.
I'm not a big jam person. I actually don't like the sweet things. No, it's not for any particular purpose. Growing up, my grandmother made incredible jam, and my mother used to make jam. I'm just not a jam person. Unless it's got some really sort of some real tartness to it, I'm not much into jam. But I'm sure it's a wonderful pursuit and quite calming.
To be honest, I don't really like eating jam that much myself either, but I really like making it.
Yes.
I like making it. Yeah, I'm much more a relish or chutney person.
Yeah. Bring all of that stuff, green tomatoes and limes and all sorts of things in chutneys. I'm happy. So let's take jam off the table for a moment and think about some of those things that we might look at this year as suitable things to eat. I did have a chat to Hilary McNevin last week, and did this great big overview of some of the, I hate this word, food trends we might see in 2017. But as you're sort of hoofing around Melbourne and surrounds, what are you noticing, things that are starting to alter and change? Is there anything that we might see happen this year that you're starting to notice already?
I missed Hilary's session last week, and I'm sure she covered most of them, so forgive me if I double up on some of the things that she's been saying. But one of the big ones, and I'm sure she will have touched on this, is the rise of vegetarian and vegan food. I just feel it everywhere. It's massive, and it's really sort of filtering down into even, you know, the basic local burger joints and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I think that's going to be one of the big ones this year.
Yeah, this has been going on for a while, and I have a little bit of a problem with this because we weren't given these particular teeth if we weren't meant to use them to chew meat.
But they're not just for chewing meat. We're meant to be omnivorous.
Yeah, I know that, but I'm more carnivorous than anything else.
You just don't want the guilt trip, right? You just don't want people saying we're going vegetarian because you don't want the guilt trip that comes with that as a carnivore.
I just don't want people saying we're going vegetarian because it means I can stop eating at their house.
Self-interest. Okay, got it.
Yeah, a total self-interest. the veganism.
I beg your pardon?
The whole thing, the move towards veganism, how we're somebody said that we're heading towards a dominant vegan culture, and I said, you have to be out of your goddamn mind.
No, that'll never happen. That will never happen. But I do think that even people who do eat meat will probably get into things like Meat Free Monday and that sort of thing. So maybe not every night of the week, but maybe one night a week or two nights a week.
I probably do that unintentionally. One or two nights a week, I might just make myself a salad with lots of fresh tomatoes and cucumbers and that sort of thing, and just forget to put meat in, and I might put some cheese or what have you as a protein. But I don't consciously go out to have a vegetarian Monday. I was having this discussion in my office yesterday, Roz. We went out for lunch, and I was talking about the things that I really don't care for are things that are designed to look like something else, like sausages. Have you seen the sausages?
I'll confess here. I have a vegetarian son and another son with a vegan girlfriend. So we have some sausages in our fridge right at the moment.
Or what looks like a meatloaf, but it's made from nuts.
Nah, not into that.
No.
I'd rather eat vegetables that are unashamedly vegetables.
Yeah, stop trying to describe. And facon. Someone's like, some facon. And I'm like, no. I'm sorry. No, it does not work.
Things like a cabbage steak I can get behind, or a cauliflower steak, you know, like a slice put on the grill and grilled and that sort of thing. Yes,
it's
I can go
steak.
With that.
It's cauliflower. It's grilled cauliflower.
Exactly that. Mm. Yeah, so that's one of the ones I am seeing, and I think we'll see a fair bit more of that going on. I think we're going to see a greater awareness of sustainable seafood this year. I think we're starting to finally get the message that we can't just go plundering the oceans for anything we want. Orange roughy, yum, bring it on, all of that sort of thing. I think we're finally getting the message that we have to be a bit more careful about the seafood we eat.
And yeah, absolutely right. And things like sardines and calamari and those things that are that breed quickly, that are much more plentiful, that are still equally as good for us. So I think that's the move we'll see away from some of those more selective, high-end, if you will, fishes and back towards something that's a bit more sensible.
Yeah, that's right. And probably a little cheaper, although, you know, flathead, which is very sustainable, is really expensive now.
Well, pork belly used to be really cheap, didn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
Until we discovered it was so bloody delicious.
Yeah, that's right.
And I guess that's one of the things where I hate talking too much about food trends, but I think as we start to see the evolution of food and the way that we play with it and enjoy it, that it becomes something that is a trend, will all of a sudden in a couple of years just be part of our diet. Are we still eating a lot of fermented and pickled food? I think the influence of places, cuisines like Korean food, for example, and the love affair with David Chang have given us a broader understanding of fermented and pickled food.
And I think that is something to really be commended, because they really are, they're very good for us and they make it more, you know, I think that idea of foods that are good for you, and that's one of them, you know, will be another one of those trends. And, you know, that awareness of gut health and that sort of thing is increasing too. And I think fermented food is a big part of that.
Tea is another thing that's sort of been thrust in front of me this year. We're going to be drinking, having more tea matched with foods, as we went through a couple of years ago with cold brew coffee being matched with foods. It seems that tea is on our list to be explored and enjoyed a bit more this year as a food match.
Yeah, I think that might be right. It's been sort of bubbling up, not as in bubble tea, but, you know, kind of a growing trend for a little while. And I know that there's a cafe in Melbourne that has a tea sommelier type of thing. So, yes, I think it will be something that we are starting to see a bit more of, which wouldn't be a bad thing, break from coffee.
Well, it's at the loss of wine, and I was going to try and chat to Mike Benny today. He's up in regional New South Wales with zero Wi-Fi. It was supposed to work, and it just didn't. But we were going to talk about the rise and rise of some alternative varieties and that sort of stuff. But tea is there, and we're going to. The suggestion is we'll be drinking less alcohol with our meals, and having more non-alcoholic beverage matches. There is some suggestion that Australia might see its first water sommelier.
Oh, no. Gosh, that's like a scene out of Portlandia, isn't it?
Well, there's a number of them in the US. There's one in particular in LA. There's a restaurant, I think, that has 80 different waters from around the world, and there is a water sommelier.
That really is just too far for me, I think. Well, but I am noticing that. I just think that's crazy. No, that's just stupid.
It is. And here in Melbourne, where you can turn on the tap and have a beautiful glass of water, we are so blessed to have such good quality water. I find it laughably absurd that there is a potential water sommelier in Melbourne.
No, think of the food miles and all of that and all the packaging. It's just crazy. No, I'm not going to endorse that one. You'll not get behind that one.
No. I'm going to ask you to hold on for a second, Roz. I've got to play a couple of announcements and we'll come back and talk some more about what some of the things we're going to be having a look at this year, including water sommeliers. You're on Cravings here on Joy 94.9. It's 28 minutes past one.
I was at work.
I was riding my horse.
I was microwaving a watermelon.
My iguanas escaped!
There are lots of reasons you might have missed your favourite show, but don't worry, because our podcast team has you covered. They work through rain, hail and national glitter shortages to bring you the best bits of every show. Visit joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab. Thanks to our podcasters, you'll never feel guilty about missing a show again.
Cravings will be back shortly, so don't go too far. But if you do miss anything, you'll hear it on The Cravings Podcast at joy.org.au/cravings via iTunes or your favourite podcast site. Sponsored by La Spaghettata. Over 35 years of food, family and fun at 238 Lygon Street, Carlton. Wine and dine with La Spaghettata for an authentic Italian experience. Pasta, wine, seafood, steak and so much more. Eat, drink, love with La Spaghettata. Call 9663 6102. Visit laspagatata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
Cars. cooking. Cruises, we have it all. Weekends on Joy 94.9.
Yes, we do. The cruises bit is coming up after 2 o'clock. We'll be talking, the escape pod. We'll be taking you travelling and talking. There were things travel agents, and I've been able to alert them to something I discovered this week, so hopefully they'll give that a mention as well. My guest at present is Rosalind Grundy. She is from The Age. She's the editor of The Good Food Guide, and we are talking some of the potential trends. We had a discussion about, I'm still giggling about the water sommelier because I think I've caused Rosalind to go a little bit apoplectic. Rosalind, welcome.
Hello. Okay, yes, apoplexy. I'll own up to that. That really is crazy.
It just makes me laugh. It is so laughable. Hey, now, the other thing that we're supposed to be seeing this year are things that are matched to our star sign. So no. I'm going to ask you a question. What is your star sign, Ros?
My star sign is Capricorn. Does that mean I'm going to eat lots of goats this year?
No, I think goats are something
that we're going to see on the menu.
I'm going through the list. I keep talking about goat while I find Capricorn.
Oh, I am seeing people starting to use goat in dishes, so I think that will be quite interesting. I like goat. It's nicer than lamb, I reckon.
Well, it is, and I live in an area where there's a big Indian community, and we can buy halal goat and go and eat goat sort of every second night of the week. I love it. So now, the 2017 Capricorn prediction, so that your ruler is going to spend a big part of your something in your 12th house, and there's going to be a lot of kombucha.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Which is going from hipster to mainstream. How do you feel about kombucha tea?
I don't particularly like kombucha, but I make kefir, which is not dissimilar.
Yes.
It's another of those probiotic-type drinks.
Yes,
it's yes, all right. If I can sub in kefir for kombucha, I can go with that.
Good. Mine is supposed to be seaweed.
Seaweed?
Yeah, the Librans are supposed to be on the seaweed this year.
Oh, okay. I've got a Libran in my life who might enjoy some seaweed then.
Indeed.
Okay.
Now, tacos. Taco. We're putting everything in a taco. So some over the last few years, we've been putting things into sliders and brioche buns and milk buns. We're apparently putting everything, stuffing everything into a taco.
Yeah, I think that could work because it will be okay for people who are celiacs. It'll be okay for people who are vegan, vegetarian or carnivores. I think that could be a hit.
Yep, good.
It kind of works across all different demographics as well. You can really dress them up. I mean, if you really have to, you could have a bit of lobster in your taco, or you could have something super cheap in your taco.
You can indeed. Now, you talked about veggie and veganism before. Sea vegetables are also supposed to be making a bigger appearance on our plate.
Yeah, I think that's right. And that's part of the sustainability thing too, isn't it?
It is. We've talked about pickles and ferments. Zero waste.
Yes, yes. I think we're seeing not just all parts of the animal, but all parts of the vegetable being used a bit more. You know, the carrot pesto and all of that kind of stuff.
Which is, it's good.
Yeah, it is good. It's not a bad idea to be using all of that stuff. And also, I'm seeing that a lot more restaurants are starting to do the composting thing and using those composters and that sort of thing, or sending their food waste off to people who will compost them and then grow vegetables with it. So that's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing.
Closed loop kind of thing.
Insta-ready food.
Yes, that was one of the ones I had on my list too. I think chefs are increasingly composing dishes with Instagram in mind.
Well, it's free marketing,
isn't it?
Yes, it is the cart pulling the horse, which is a little bit alarming. Portuguese food?
Oh, okay, maybe. I haven't seen that, but I'll keep an eye out for that.
Well, I'm alerted to the fact that I thought it started some time ago, particularly in Sydney, where there was those beautiful little Portuguese custard tarts that we were eating everywhere for a minute, and then Portugal just seemed to die off a bit.
Yeah. Asian breakfasts, I think we will see more and more.
Yes.
That was something that started last year, but I think that's going to be a growing thing.
Brunchfast?
Yes, I think that's
so
right.
So where you combine your breakfast, your lunch and everything in between, and it's your brunchfast. So it's sort of one meal that happens before the evening meal.
Yes, oysters for breakfast.
Yeah, bring that on. And I'm going to talk to Pure South, to Philip Kennedy from Pure South in a minute, and I know they do have oysters for breakfast.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing they'll do there.
Yes.
Home delivery I'm seeing a fair bit of. I think even some kitchens being designed now with the Uber delivery guy in mind, you know, that easy access to a delivery person at the back door kind of thing. So it's, you know, an acknowledgement that that kind of thing is and then a growing trend.
Mm. Well, we're seeing Uber Eats, Deliveroo, Foodora. There's three or four of those services around already, so that's big. And the last one I've got on my list for you, Roz, insects.
No, I really don't see that as being... I know that people keep pushing it, and I can see, you know, in my mind, I can see the arguments and all of that sort of thing. It's sustainable, rah, rah, rah. But I just don't... Anytime we have a story on the Good Food website, goodfood.com.au...
Nice plug, well done.
Is that subtle?
Yes, very.
anytime we have insect stories, they just don't get people clicking on it. People just are not really interested in eating insects. You know, other than maybe a novelty in a bar when they're, you know, deep fried crickets are passed around and people go, oh, I haven't tried that. I'll try it. No, I don't see it.
Let me give you another take on the insects, is where the insects are cooked and then pulverized into powder form like a flour, so you could have a cricket pancake.
Yeah, right.
Thomasina Myers is apparently with her Oaxaca chain and some of the health food shops selling insects as well. So when it's moved on from Heston and Renee Redzepi, for example, to people like Thomasina Myers, it starts to gather a bit more steam.
Can you see supermarkets stocking cricket flour or anything? No, I just really can't see that becoming mainstream.
If I'd have said to you 20 years ago, would we have seen supermarkets stocking sriracha, black rice, those things, you probably would have gone, it could be a challenge.
Yeah.
Things evolve.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm happy to be proved wrong on that.
Oh, no, I'm not suggesting prove wrong. I'm just thinking about the evolution and the way that we think about it might start to shift our thinking a little bit.
Mm. I was thinking because of the greater uncertainty around Trump, Brexit and all those other things, we're going to be looking more to comfort food this year.
Oh, thank God for that. Bread and butter pudding will be back. I'll give you that.
Mac and cheese, you know, all of that. I think
there was a little pub yesterday and they had a mac and cheese burger. So where the patty was mac and cheese built into a burger.
Ah, okay, so that's carb on carb. Okay.
Yeah, it was a Friday lunch and had it with a glass of, I didn't have it, but at the same lunch, a glass of Griesling.
Griesling.
Where Pinot Gris and Riesling have married and is now Griesling.
And they had Griesling. Oh, gee, that's not a very attractive marketing term, is it, Griesling?
No, but God, it tastes nice. By gum, I enjoyed it. Roz, it's always good to talk to you. I do need to shuffle off and grab somebody
else
on the phone.
Pete.
But I'm looking forward to the day that I can sit with you and discuss cricket powder or some sort of flour that we'll be using.
With a flight of water?
Yeah, with a water sommelier, absolutely. good to talk to you.
Roz
Grundy is from The Age. She has her finger on the pulse more so than most of us about what's happening in restaurants. She doesn't agree with my pulverized insects, but we might get there. It is 21 minutes to 2 year on cravings here on Joy 94.9. My name is Pete Dillon. I am laughing at myself for the next 20 minutes.
Bonjour, I am Gabriel Gatte. You are listening to Cravings with Peter Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Indeed you are. It's 19 minutes to 2. You are on Joy 94.9. My name is Pete Dillon. Coming up after 2 o'clock, the Escape Pod will take you on a journey. They are, of course, your travel program, and they will take you to a discussion, I understand, with some travel agents about where to find good bargains and whether travel agents still are, in fact, necessary. In that previous chat, we were talking to Roz Grundy about some of the things we might be seeing as trends for 2017, and one of them she mentioned was oysters for breakfast, and I know where to go to get some of the most delicious oysters from Tasmania. St. Helens is the recently reopened Pure South in Southgate. Philip Kennedy is one of the two men behind that, and he joins me on the phone. Philip, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Pete. How are you?
Good, thank you. Good, good. Restaurant full?
walked in today thinking not a beautiful day and it might be a little quiet, but the place was packed for lunch.
Good, good, good.
A bit of a buzz on the boardwalk at Southgate. Nice.
Well, that's always a nice thing to see. For the first time, you are doing all-day dining, so breakfast right through until late at night. What's on the breakfast menu?
I was a little bit delighted to hear you say that Roz thought oysters for breakfast might be a trend this year.
Well, Roz and I both love oysters for breakfast, and I think it's a perfect idea.
My best ever story of oysters for breakfast was standing in waist-deep water at Coles Bay, East Coast, Tasmania. I think the water was 8 degrees or something. I'm exaggerating, but it was cold, and we're standing in waders, not a breath of wind, blue skies, and sucking down oysters that, you know, before 9 o'clock in the morning. It was
straight off the lease?
We were picking them from below the water, eating them from... We're eating them out of the water.
There is. I know it sounds indulgent.
I'm in water, and the oysters are at my knee height in the water underneath me, so you pick them up, crack them, and eat them. Fantastic. And you're allowed to drink at that time of day.
Well, of course you are. It does sound indulgent, but I've been in a similar situation in Coffin Bay where I sat on this bargy sort of thing, and there was a fellow waist deep in water picking oysters off the leases. The water was a bit warmer than 8 degrees. And he's just cracking these, and they had king oysters. And I don't know if you've ever eaten a king oyster, but it's like swallowing a small shoe. quite a large thing to get down one's gullet.
I love my oysters, but I'd have to work my way into that one.
So oysters are on the menu. Certainly I can come in and have a glass of champagne with my oysters for breakfast.
7 o'clock license. And on the weekend, Bloody Marys and oysters sounds good for me.
Yes, I think it's a marvellous way to start the day. Something else that I know is on your menu that I can have for breakfast are like a little smoked salmon taco.
Yeah, ocean trout, actually.
Ocean trout, I beg your pardon.
Yeah, just a little dab of finger lime and just a little touch of avocado. And there are hints of Mexico there, but not really.
That's, well, there's some of the
ocean trout taco. It's delicious.
We're just talking about anything can go in a taco, and one of the trends for 2017 is anything you can find stuffed into a taco, and the influence of Asian breakfast as well. So you're absolutely bang on trend there, Mr. Kennedy, with some of the things that are on the menu.
Yeah, wow. We might be setting trends. Look out. There's all sorts of references on our breakfast menu to things that you don't think of for breakfast, but if you think a little longer, you've had them for breakfast, like the ocean trout taco. You know, we've done... traditionally, we have eaten salmon, smoked salmon for breakfast, just not like that.
Correct.
And when I grew up on the farm, and we'd work really early and then come in and have a steak for breakfast at, 9 o'clock, but you'd already done 3 hours' work.
Yeah.
Or a brisket. Dad used to have, yesterday's dinner... Last night's dinner was breakfast somehow, and it might be cold corned beef or and there's brisket on our menu and there's steak on our menu and I know it doesn't sound like breakfast, but the way Chef puts it out is very clever. And people are ordering it and really enjoying it. It's great.
There's wallaby on the breakfast menu.
No, that's not traditional, but yes. Wallaby with smoked eggs.
Which is, again, it's sort of reinventing or reimagining some of the things that we liked to eat at various times of the day, but they can be made into breakfast food. And I think one of the things, another of those trends that Roz and I were just speaking about was brunchfast, where it's breakfast, lunch, and brunch sort of all rolled into one meal, which becomes probably slightly larger than you would traditionally have a bowl of cereal as you're getting your stockings on and leaving the house. But combining that sort of breakfast and then that mid-morning idea and lunch all in one meal becomes an ideal way to start a day.
People are surprising me what they're ordering. We do have a mix of things that are pretty typical breakfast and things that are pretty typical lunch. But what time they're being ordered doesn't follow the normal plan, if you like. So when we first opened for breakfast on the first day, the first thing ordered was ocean trout tacos. And
excellent.
I sort of did a little yay.
Yeah. Is there an ideology? And I know the philosophy behind Pure South is Tasmanian produce, but is there a philosophy of sort of trying to shake things up a little?
No, I don't know about shake things up, but we like to think for ourselves. Sometimes if you do that and run too hard, though, people just don't get it at all. And so, you know, in our first opening, we've had people that have sort of scratched their heads and said, I'm not sure what these guys are up to. I know that. So you need to lead them into it a little bit. So shaking things up too much is probably, we've got to bring people along with us. People are generally really smart, but you've got to help them along a little bit too. So just shaking things up, I don't think it's commercially the best thing to do. So
not if you're shaking things up for shaking things up's sake, but if it's a result of, thought out, sensible discovery of the fact that people do want to eat wallaby and smoked eggs for breakfast, or they want to eat oysters for breakfast. I guess it's offering that opportunity for people to have something other than some smashed avocado with feta on toast.
Exactly that. Yeah. So Chef does put things... I scratch my head sometimes when he writes it down, and then I eat it, and everything changes. So, yeah, wallaby and smoked eggs for breakfast isn't what I would first think of as I wake up hungry, but people love it.
So exactly.
We do shake that up a bit.
12 years as a hatted restaurant... Do you think this, because this renovation is massive, I was in there the other day with some friends, and it's the most startling place, it's enormous. Do you think you've challenged yourself to maybe a second hat, or I certainly know it's not the intention, but are you ready for that?
Yeah, I guess we don't chase hats, but it is a reference point for people to, I guess, describe where you're aiming. I don't know. Chef put on a Scottsdale pork. We free-range farm out of Scottsdale in north-east Tassie.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel Unwin and his family. So Scottsdale pork belly with peaches, Heidi Farm Tilsit cheese and lobster. And I thought, holy moly, where are you going with that?
It's an interesting combination.
Yeah. Okay, I'll say it again slowly. Pork belly, peaches, Heidi Farm Tilsit and with cheese and lobster.
So pork belly, peaches, cheese, and lobster. It's like someone's given him a mystery box.
Yeah, it's not. It sounds like a challenge.
It does.
It's stunning. Yeah,
so and it works by the sound of it.
But it also aims and points sort of at that two hat space. But the thing next, the line before it is on the menu is squid. We get fresh squid sent up from a fisherman in Tassie too. So with just tartare, lime and avocado. So really simple and clean, just beautiful. You know, beautifully finished, simple, clean. And so I guess we're at both ends of the spectrum. Hats. I think his food is as good as, you know, it's two-hat food, but we don't try to aim there with everything we do. We try to make the doors wider open and easier. Upstairs, I guess that service level is a different style to downstairs. It's supposed to be really welcome, easy, drop in anytime, unplanned, get the same standard of food without all the, formality and slowness of service. Just take it, sit on the bench, watch the world go by. We have bench seats at the windows and have that same beautiful food, but just do it with a pilsner on tap, or, you know, do it easy. So you go, well, we're not aiming at hats there, are we?
No, but I think by the diversity of offering, you are providing something that's unique, and therefore will come to the attention of those people that are reviewing restaurants and determining what the punter is looking for.
Hope they enjoy it. I expect they'll get it. We've got to be careful. It's an interesting thing watching since we've been reopening. Some people that sit down and contemplate the menu and engage with the waiter and the menu love it. Others that are in a hurry sometimes sort of scratch their head and say, but I just want... And so we have to slow down a little bit and make sure we're bringing along everyone with us. Yeah, that it's not too complicated.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's complicated, sophisticated, classic cooking, but try to give them something
a bit of simplicity
that's intuitive and easy to understand. Mm. And yeah, pleases the crowd. If you're trying to be everything by the sound of that,
indeed,
aren't we?
Indeed. Not really. Depends what people are in the mood for.
Bring added food to everyday snacking.
Yeah.
And unplanned dining.
Which is the thing that we probably do most. Just one final question, going back to the trends that Roz and I were speaking about. Insects are going to be apparently a trend, whether they're pulverized into a flour or a powder, or whether they're, you know, sitting on top of a piece of pineapple like Alex Atala would do in Sao Paulo in Brazil. Are they something that you would contemplate if there was some sort of insect plague in Tasmania and we determined that they were good for us and we like to eat them? Is it something that you think you could get chef's head around?
Oh, the only insects we've had on the plate here have been unwanted.
Right.
to be fair, Pete, I haven't really thought about it too hard. I find it funny.
It is. And one thing you might also might find funny, which I have been laughing about for the whole hour, is there's a restaurant in LA that has a water sommelier. And there is talk of, there's certainly more than one in the US, but there's talk of a Melbourne venue opening or a Sydney venue opening that has a water sommelier whose sole responsibility is to find you one of 80 different kinds of water to match with your food. I'm hoping that makes you laugh as well, because I have been giggling about it all hour.
I was wondering whether I was supposed to be laughing or not, but I had a grin on my face. Good luck.
The absurdity of that, it's just so laughable. I don't know how anyone could think that is something that the world wants.
Everything changes. Mm-hmm. We need to evolve with it, Pete. I remember as a young fellow on the farm thinking, buying water? Why would you pay for water?
And now look at us. We're all running around sucking out of those plastic bottles, ruining the environment.
Well, and they're more expensive by the litre than petrol or milk.
Correct. Hey, Philip, it's always good to talk to you. The venue is, of course, on Southgate, there on the Yarra River, just across the footbridge from Flinders Street Station. Continued success, my friend.
Thanks very much, Pete. Nice chatting to you.
Likewise. It's Philip Kennedy. He is from Pure South, one of the owners, and I do recommend you go and have a bit of a gander because it's a very nice place to see and be seen. I'm almost done. I'm going to finish with some music today, so I will let you know that, again, the Escape Pod will take you travelling after 2 o'clock. We'll be talking travel agents. They will be talking travel agents. I'll have a couple of messages, and we'll finish with a bit of a song which alludes to the very start of our program, which is Life in a Northern Town by the Dream Academy. I've been Pete Dillon. This has been Cravings. I have been delighted to have your company yet again. Tad's back next week. We'll talk to you then. Have a good week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to another Cravings podcast with Pete Dillon, online at joy.org.au/cravings and live Saturdays from 1 p.m. on Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. Exploring all that's finest in food and beverage across Melbourne and Victoria. Sponsored by La Spaghettata. Over 35 years of food, family and fun at 238 Lygon Street, Carlton. Wine and dine with La Spaghettata for an authentic Italian experience. Pasta, wine, seafood, steak and so much more. Dine in and enjoy the authentic sights and sounds of Lygon Street. Or order takeaway now via Deliveroo, Uber Eats or Foodora. Eat, drink, love with La Spaghettata. Call 9663-6102. Visit laspaghettata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.